This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday for another hour of old-time radio crime stories. Begin this week with Broadway Is My Beat, their story from January 12, 1952, titled The Larry Moore Murder Case. After that, it's Sherlock Holmes and the Cadaver in the Roman Toga, their story from November 9, 1947.
Broadway's My Beat, from Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world.
Broadway's My Beat, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
The still brilliant light of a new January drifts down over Broadway, and the pattern it reveals is unchanged. The scalpeled edges of piled concrete are still defined against winter sky. Glints are struck off chrome and steel, and the faces of the mob are already molded back into the old year's anguish. Because still, the vision of beauty stands in a doorway at the end of night. And you walk toward it, and you're stopped by the hawker who has another plan for you. You push him aside, keep walking. He stops you again. Lays odds you'll never make it, and you never do. And the light filters a corridor you walk with a man who has just been acquitted of the murder of his wife. A man you arrested, testified against, watched as he was given the verdict of freedom. And in his face, no sign of release, of joy, only a newer pallor, sudden, intense.
You tried, Danny. You didn't make it.
The court found you innocent, Mr. Welch.
Yeah, didn't they, though? You know something, Danny?
What?
They say I'm innocent. You say it. Me, I still don't know. I was out of the world at the time. I was drunk.
That girl, Ida Gray.
Yeah. Spunky kid to sit up there and tell it into the teeth of the world that I was with her at the time Faye was... My wife was being killed. I wonder if I had fun. I wonder if Ida and me had fun while Faye was dying.
She broke our case, saved your life.
You want it? I give it to you. For whatever my life's worth now, take it. Deal it out among your friends.
Look, Mr. Welch, you're a free man.
What's with this free? A man pronounces a word and that makes me free? You look. Faye's dead. The girl I loved is dead. A girl... You know something, Danny?
What?
It's now the law of the land that I didn't kill my wife. That means someone else did.
That's right.
I make you a promise out of the goodness of my heart. I'll get to the killer before you do. Hope to die if I don't.
We'll handle it, Mr. Welch. You leave it all to us.
Hold it a minute, will you, Danny? You too, Johnny. I want a picture. You and Ida here. Here, stand close to him, Ida. Come on, come on. Get close. Touch his face or something.
Get out of here before...
Oh, Johnny, Ida saved your life.
You don't have to, Johnny, if you don't want to.
Stay out of it, huh, Ida, baby? You just stay posed where I... come on, Johnny. Ida here, this pretty girl here, handed you back your life on a silver platter.
That's what Ida did, all right. Okay, take your picture.
And step aside so a picture could be made. A picture of a man, Johnny Welch, his eyes dull, unfocused. Corner of his lips twitching somewhere between pain and hate. The girl looking up at him, unsmiling. And the man with the camera.
All right, now try to look glad about it, will you?
Forced smiles,
yeah.
Then. Posed happiness for all
that's
the
better
world to see.
Okay, got it.
Then turn the whole thing over to your memory. Go away. Spend the next 2 days for routine. Fill in spaces on report sheets. Catch up on the paperwork. Shake a finger at a schoolteacher from the Midwest who was clapping her blackboard erasers on the runway at Times Square. Speak at a boys' club. Lose 3 boxes of matches at the poker game in the squad room. Catch up on your reading at home. And then the call comes. Danny Clover speaking.
Danny, guy named Larry Moore just got some lumps.
What are you talking about, Sergeant?
Fella named Larry Moore. Just got slugged. Good.
All right. Well, why did you call me, Gino?
Guy that did it to him was named Johnny Welch.
Oh. Did you pick up Johnny?
Nah, we're looking.
Where do I find this Larry Moore?
Same hotel where Johnny lives. Room 305.
I don't see why you waste your time, Mr. Clover. I'm not going to bring charges against Johnny.
Looks like he went over you pretty good, Mr. Moore. Can you see out of that left eye?
What difference does it make? I'm not going to press charges.
Why'd he beat you up?
Between you and me, that's all.
Okay.
He tried to make me confess.
To what?
That I'd killed his wife.
I see.
I guess you want to know why Johnny would think a thing like that, huh?
Yeah, I would.
I knew Faye Welch.
Know her well?
A lot of fellas did. You know, the boys who hung around the bar where the Welches lived.
Then Mrs. Welch used to hang around at the bar pretty much.
It came out at the trial.
Your name didn't.
For what reason? I just play piano for cocktail hour. I did her requests for her, played them.
I just can't understand it, Mr. Moore. A man comes into your room, accuses you of murder, beats you...
And I don't get mad about it. Why should I?
A guy like Johnny... A guy like him, he's upset. He needs to be understood, Mr. Clover, not arrested. What kind of a guy do you think I am, anyhow?
And for a moment, consider him. Consider the man whose reaction to the violence done him was compassion, understanding. To have come out of a beating from an embittered man, a man on the prowl, dedicated to the killing of his wife's murderer, and still Larry Moore makes no charge against him. Wonder about it. And note your own shock that you've stained Larry Moore's compassion with suspicion and leave with no answer to Larry Moore's question as to what kind of a man he was, anyhow. At headquarters, issue an all-points bulletin for the pickup of Johnny Welch, acquitted of the murder of his wife, because where he walked violence and death. And strip off the hours of waiting with routine, with talk to Detective Muggum.
It isn't safe for the citizens with that guy loose, Danny.
We'll find him.
He's a sick man. Right now, you could go so far as to call him crazy.
Maybe.
Who knows who he's going to choose out of the crowd to call his wife's murderer? This time, he just beats up on a man. Next time, maybe he'll be more thorough. And a sick man turns into a killer.
We'll find him.
Sure we will. Mind if I open the window a little, Danny? It's stuffy.
Go ahead.
Lucky fella. Lucky fella.
What do you say?
Johnny Welch, lucky boy. He just didn't know how lucky.
No?
Sure no. You find him passed out on the floor, dead drunk, with a bottle in one hand, a gun in the other, and his wife, Faye, with a look on her face that comes from being shot to death.
The real killer could...
The real killer?
Yeah, the real killer could have killed Faye Welch, planted the gun on Johnny because Johnny was too gone to know anything. It has to be like that.
Because a jury of his peers said so?
Well...
Because a girl, a Miss Ida Gray, hops a boat from England, arrives just in time to tell a court Johnny was seeing her off to Europe from the hours of 11 to 2 the night his wife was killed?
It's established Mrs. Welch was killed around 1 o'clock that night.
Look, I'm not fighting it, then. Sure it was established. Goes back to what I was saying. Johnny Welch is a lucky boy. Comes home from a party, drunk. Staggers down a hotel hall, meets an old girlfriend, Ida Gray. She takes him with her to bid her a bon voyage. This takes till 2 in the morning, she says. Alibi. Freedom. And Johnny Welch walks the streets to...
Just came in, Danny. Good day to you, Detective McGovern.
What came in, Gino?
They found Johnny Welch. They're keeping him there for you.
Where?
Blossom's Bar and Grill on 3rd Avenue. One of them 3rd Avenue joints that dispense mockery with... Danny, button up your overcoat. You shouldn't catch cold.
Johnny? Hi, Johnny. Mind if I sit down? How do you feel?
How do I feel?
Let's get out of here, Johnny. Come on, I want to talk to you.
I live here.
Come on, you have a nice place back at the hotel.
I live here. my home.
Look, Johnny, you...
How do I feel, the man asked. Simple question and begs a simple answer. I could say, all right, I feel good. You could say, not so good. Stop me when I get the answer you want.
What have you been doing for the last...
What's the matter, don't you drink? Grab the bottle by the throat, friend. Pour. Admire my home. Drink, drink.
I'm working, Johnny. I'm...
So am I. This is the way it's done. You finish a bottle and hold it to the naked eye. Like this. Now, wait. The empty bottle. The things inside I can see. Dancers. Friends. The people who smile want you to come along. I got no more friends.
What's happened, Johnny?
No more friends.
Look, it'll take them a little while to get used to. I've seen it happen before. A man acquitted of murder, his friends are a little...
They think maybe I did it after all. They look at me. They just look at me with, you killed your wife.
They don't think that. You were acquitted.
And Faye's dead. Where she was once is nothing. You never heard her laugh. Or talk. I saw her when...
Johnny.
What do you want?
I saw Larry Moore a little while ago.
I got it on the list. I'm going to see him.
Leave him alone.
Just to apologize. That's the only reason why I want to see Larry Moore. Apologize because I slugged him. Apologize because Faye is dead. It's a tremendous loss to all of us.
Want me to take you back to the hotel now?
You don't know what I've been saying at all, do you? Get your ear out of the mud, friend. I'll say something plain. I'm here because Faye is dead. The 12 good men and true say I didn't kill her, and that's good. If I'd killed her, I wouldn't want to live anymore. If I didn't kill her, someone else did. I told
you... The police will take care of it, Johnny.
Surprise, surprise, surprise. Get out of here, friend. Leave me alone. Go on, get out.
Leave him alone. Leave him to the life he wanted because you had no reason to intrude. Out on the street again and uptown. Stop off for a sandwich. Then back to work again. Back to headquarters. Park the car on the lot across from emergency.
Over here, Danny.
And the voice that stops you belongs to Detective Mugovan, standing beside an ambulance. What's up, Mugovan?
Where have you been?
What's the difference, where I've been? What's the matter?
The call came as soon as you left. You didn't leave word where you'd be. I took it.
Took what?
Now, hold it a minute, fellas. Take a look.
Oh, no.
Larry Moore, Danny. In the morning, he's beat up. In the evening, he's dead. You see it, Danny?
Yeah, I see it, Mugovan.
Stabbed to death, Danny. Murdered.
You are listening to Broadway's My Beat, written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin, and starring Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover. Instead of going down, the annual rate of polio cases in this country is going up. Instead of growing panicky with fear in the face of such an unwelcome fact, there is a way in which we all can join the army which is fighting to check this trend and ultimately defeat infantile paralysis. We can contribute to the March of Dimes. Give today so that the 1952 March of Dimes will be the biggest ever and a really potent fighting force against polio.
When it's January on Broadway, the darkness drains through the scarlet of neon before it's called night. And the dreams that are dreamed where a street corner touches the edge of evening drift away on the black wind. The whirlpool of color, flung skyward by the spectacular's dips, becomes a riot of shadows when it touches the street. It's the once-upon-a-time land, wrapped in winter's mist, gray and cold. The laughter's always at the other end of the block. It's nighttime, crowd time, the lonely time. In And consider this night the slaying of a man. Consider facts. Dead man Larry Moore. Suspect Johnny Welch. Nighttime, work time. Go back to the bar that Johnny called home. He's not there. Check his hotel. Not there. So issue an all-points bulletin again on Johnny. He's not to be found. So next morning, go to a friend of his, Ida Gray, the young woman who once helped him.
I can't understand why they didn't announce you down at the desk, Mr. Clover.
Because I told them I was a policeman. I told them not to announce me.
You were afraid I'd fly the coop? Am I that important?
What do you do for a living, Miss Gray?
I could have told you that over the house phone.
Tell me now.
May I be technical?
Right ahead.
I'm a technician, Mr. Clover. I assist in the preparation of antibiotic cultures. Do I scare you?
May I ask you why you went to Europe? Vacation?
Not at all. Work. I went over to observe techniques in the manufacture of antibiotics in England. Observe, report. Free exchange of scientific methods. That was my job.
And you left for England the night of Mrs. Welch's murder and came home during the trial. Fortunate for Johnny, Miss Gray.
Had I known of the murder, I would have returned much sooner. Honor bright. Poor Johnny.
You feel sorry for him, huh?
Bring him to me. Just bring him to me. Just let me get my hands on him.
And what?
I'd never take them away. Not very scientific talk for a technician like me, is it?
He killed a man last night.
What?
Stabbed him to death, a man named Larry Moore. First Johnny threatened him, then he killed him.
Larry Moore?
You've probably seen him. Larry Moore played piano downstairs in the lounge.
And Larry killed Johnny's wife, is that it? And who killed Larry?
Do you know where Johnny is?
If you find out where, take me to him, will you?
You'll be here, Miss Gray.
As a matter of fact, no. I have a date with a scientific fella. We're going to discuss variable hydrogen ion concentrations in oreomycin culture. Do I bore you? Then you might as well go.
Good morning, Danny. And something else. Danny?
Do you want something, Gino?
It is not a question, do I want something? Let us say, rather, it is a question, do the gentle lady waiting outside your office want something?
Hmm?
They wish to see you and that the late deceased Larry Moore.
Oh, bring them in, Gino.
They tell me... who cares what people tell me? This way to see Danny Clover. If I am needed, Danny, you know where to reach me.
The sergeant said you wanted to see me about Larry Moore.
Yeah, I'm Chet Duggar from Trenton.
Mm-hmm.
Her and Miss Hempstead are... Where are you from, honey? We never did get around to geography. Where are you from? Tell us, honey. Oh, the kid's scared, Mr. Clover. That's why she's clammed up. If you knew what I went through to get her to come down here with... Oh, don't be scared, honey.
Why did you come here, Mr. Duggar?
Larry and Miss Hempstead and me, Chet Duggar, we were a happy threesome until comes a knock on Larry's hotel room. Larry gets up from the piano to answer it, so he says to someone, oh, what a pleasant surprise. Then he grunts, walks back into the room, can't play the piano anymore. The knife in his chest makes him off thumbs.
And you want to tell me you saw who it was?
All Miss Hempstead and me want to tell you is we were there in Larry's hotel room because it got gay in the cocktail lounge, didn't it, honey? And Larry invited us up to his cell for more of his piano. And we were getting around to the oldies.
Why didn't you come here before?
Oh, didn't I tell you? We're from out of town. The etiquette of what to do when a piano player dies is, well, unknown to us, isn't it, honey? Then comes the dawn, and the etiquette is... Oh, pardon me, your phone.
Danny Clover speaking.
Dr. Sinsky, Danny. Downstairs in the infirmary. They just brought in Ida Gray.
You were worried about etiquette, Mr. Duggar. Stick around. We'll try to clear it up for you.
Miss Gray's going to recover, Danny. So you don't have to worry about that. Probably concussion, bruises.
Where was she found, Dr. Sinsky?
In an alley, Danny, off West 16th. Here's the officer's report.
No one tried to look at her assailant.
What'd you say?
Nothing. I was just reading the report.
That's her room, Danny. You want to see?
Is she conscious?
No. She keeps saying something, though, over and over.
Let's go in. What's she saying?
Get close to her, Danny. Put your ear close. You'll hear.
No use. Oh, you. After all.
You understand her?
Uh-huh. You said it wasn't any use. So.
Did I bring this in here with her?
That purse?
Yeah.
Danny, what are you...
Just be a doctor, huh, doctor? This is the way a policeman works. Lipstick, dishes, keys, comb, wallet, bank book.
I don't envy you one bit, Danny. To have to pick the little things. To have to pry like that.
Sometimes little things, doctor. Would you say this was a little thing?
What?
This entry in Miss Gray's bank book?
So she made a withdrawal and closed her account. Maybe she needed the money. I found myself face to face with needing money.
But you never had the reason Miss Gray did, doctor. Take care of her. Don't let her out of your sight. Markovan, Tartaglia, come in.
Yeah, sure, Danny. We're coming.
Need something, Dan?
Yeah, shut the door. Where you been, Markovan?
Out and around.
That's an answer?
Yeah, I consider it an answer. What do you want?
Now, boys, please. Before our lips get pulled any tighter, let's consider that we have all been chums together for a long time now.
Johnny Welch has been hammering his way through alleys. Give him a little more time, we'll have more debt on our hands. When are you going to get around to finding him, Muggavin?
When I do, you'll be the first to know. Yeah. I say it in the presence of a witness.
Look,
when I do...
Look, fellas, we are all at nerve's edge here. Our patience exhausted to the raw quick. Our courtesy...
What about you, Tartaglia? How does a police sergeant pass his time...
Before you say something for which we will all be ashamed in the morning, Danny, let me tell you what a police sergeant has been doing. He has been heltering and skeltering up the nooks and down the crannies of police...
Doing what?
What his good lieutenant has ordered him to do. Checking the bank account of the late deceased Larry Moore against the aforementioned same of Miss Ida Gray, who was lately assailed by person or persons...
And you found?
What I found is what I hope will make us all friendly once more. In these two bank books is what I found. Here, put your heads together over it, then clasp hands.
Argovan?
Yeah, Danny?
Take a look. Do anything to you?
Yeah. Yesterday, Larry Moore deposited in his bank the exact amount Ida Gray withdrew from hers. That is what it does to me, Danny. Blackmail.
Yeah. Dr. Sinsky's with a girl named Ida Gray at the emergency hospital. I want that girl booked.
Roger, we'll call.
Hey, what do you want a book for? Hey, look, you, what's the idea?
Hey, tell them who I am, Danny. They shouldn't start roughing me for entering without a pass.
Marty Udenfreud, Margovan, Gino, friend of mine.
And in case you ever afford a cab, I hack on 43rd and Broadway. Pleased to meet you, fella.
Hey, what's in your mind, Marty?
Hey, remember the blintzes my wife said he made for your last holidays? Remember how you enjoyed them? You told me.
I did enjoy them, Marty.
Well, I got now something you will enjoy even more, and without sour cream. Hmm? The whereabouts of a fugitive named Johnny Welch.
Where?
I spotted him sneaking into a flea bag hotel down to the Bowery. Saw the light go on, second floor front. Broke a few traffic manifestos getting it to you, Danny. However...
Take me there, Marty.
Danny?
Yeah, what do you want?
That girl with Dr. Sinsky. What do we book her for?
For murder. Come on, Marty, take me to Johnny Welch. So go now to a familiar place. Familiar because it's called the Bowery. Because it's the place where dreams are lost and violence is born.
That one, Danny. That one right there.
The air is chill with many things. The figure huddled against the night wind. Cold chalk scratched on a brick wall. Dampness on lips as a woman watches you walk by. And into the derelict hotel and up the steps. And think briefly, this is the sound of a winter's grave.
Danny?
That's right, Johnny.
Come on in.
And the face of Johnny Welch is the face of a grave. Without meaning, without expression. Lifeless.
I've been waiting for you, Danny.
Oh? I thought you were hiding.
Hiding?
After what you did, Johnny.
No, you got it all wrong.
Tell me about it.
The reason why I'm here.
That's right.
I don't know any other place, Danny. There's no other place left for me. Even the people in the bottom of the bottle danced away.
Larry Moore, Ida Gray, they're not in your life anymore?
Larry?
He's dead.
I didn't know. How'd he make it?
Ida.
Ida. Always Ida. I saw her a while ago. She rubbed her cheek against me and said things you'd never believe. To me. She said she loved me. Did you find her?
Uh-huh.
She killed Larry, huh? She didn't tell me.
Maybe you didn't give her a chance.
I gave her all the time she needed. She talked and talked. Things she told
me. Did she tell you how she perjured herself for you? How you were never with her the night of your wife's murder?
She told me.
And you almost killed Ida for it.
I told you something once, Danny. I told you if I killed my wife, I didn't want to live anymore. I meant it.
Now you know you killed her, don't you?
That. You can't touch me for it because I was acquitted. Double jeopardy. State can't try a man twice for the same crime.
That's right, Johnny. We can't hold you for assault with intent to kill for a long time.
Intent? Didn't I make it?
No.
What's going to happen to Ida?
You know, she'll be tried for murder.
Why'd she kill him?
Larry Moore must have known she was lying on the stand at your trial. He worked at the hotel. He saw Ida leave for the boat by herself, not with you. So he was blackmailing her.
Twist, huh?
Yeah. And all she wanted was you. That's why she perjured herself, got you off. I asked you before, Johnny, why'd you beat her up?
Saving my life. I told you I don't want to live now that I know what I did.
You'll live. Prison, Johnny.
Sure. You can stall it for a while, Danny. And then I'll come back here. Look at this place. Then go over to the window and look outside. Gutter from top to bottom, all of it. Hold me as long as you want. Then I'm coming back to it.
Why?
Why? What's being dead got that this hasn't got?
It's a panic in neon, this Broadway, where pleasure is a packaged commodity, like pain, where bargain prices prevail for numbness and a half-hour smile, sometimes on installments. It's the place that dares you, and one way or another it'll rock you to sleep. It's Broadway, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway, my beat.
Broadway's My Beat stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover, with Charles Calvert as Tartaglia and Jack Crucian as Mugovan. The program was produced and directed by Elliot Lewis, with musical score composed and conducted by Alexander Courage. In tonight's story, Harry Bartell was heard as Johnny Welch. Featured in the cast were Mary Shipp, Shepard Menken, Steve Roberts, and Jerry Hausner. Our Miss Brooks is your Miss Brooks every Sunday evening over most of these same CBS radio stations. CBS comedy fans know she's really the sparkling comedian Eve Arden. Folks who haven't met Mr. Boynton, education-slinging Eve's bashful boyfriend, and the rest of our Miss Brooks laughmates shouldn't let another Sunday pass without enjoying this refreshing CBS laugh spreader. Bill Anders speaking. And remember, those lovable rascals, Amos and Andy, are here every Sunday on the CBS Radio Network. Thank you.
New York, the makers of Clipper Crab clothes for men, and 924 leading retail stores from coast to coast, present the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Stories are based upon the character of Sherlock Holmes, created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Sherlock Holmes is portrayed by John Stanley, Dr. Watson by Alfred Shirley, and the dramatizations are by Edith Meiser. Once again, we find ourselves in front of Dr. Watson's crackling fire.
Just a moment, Mr. Harris, just a moment till I put on a fresh brand knot so our listeners can really hear it. Yeah, that's the ticket. Now, go ahead, Mr. Harris.
Outside, a cold white autumn mist shrouds the black tree skeletons. But inside, we sit warm and cozy and ready for another of Dr. Watson's fabulous Sherlock Holmes adventures. What's it to be tonight, sir?
Your conversation of white shrouds and skeletons brings to mind one of the most bizarre problems we ever undertook to solve. It came dash close to being our final problem, as a matter of fact.
Sounds promising, Doctor. Nothing I like better than hearing about Holmes in a tight spot.
And whenever our adversary proved to be the notorious Professor Moriarty, it was generally a very tight spot.
Professor Moriarty, wasn't he the man Holmes referred to as the Napoleon of crime?
The same. Actually, this case began when Sir George Westbrook discovered a corpse dressed in a Roman senator's toga, tunic, and sandals. Holmes always maintained he could deduce a man's entire history from his wardrobe. But this time...
Doctor... Speaking of judging people by their clothes, I thought
Bless my soul. Yes, of course. I almost forgot. Let's have a few words from our sponsor, who is also an authority on the subject of gentlemen's apparel.
May I say, Dr. Watson, that most people, like Mr. Holmes, do judge people by their appearance. That's mighty important in connection with Clippercraft clothes. Because you'd never guess Clippercraft costs so little. Such low prices for such truly fine quality are rare, to say the least. Clippercraft suits are yours for only $35 and $40, with a few special numbers at $43.75. Top coats and overcoats are only $30 to $40, and sport jackets $24. These are planned values, the result of the Clippercraft plan concentrating the buying power of 924 leading stores across the country, resulting in tremendous savings in manufacturing and distribution costs. Remember, all this is yours in your own local independent store, where friendly attention is traditionally yours. Want to convince yourself? It's as easy as a visit to your Clippercraft dealers. Just compare Clippercraft with clothes selling for many dollars more. Now, Dr. Watson, to get back to the gentleman in the Roman toga.
All right, Mr. Harrison. It all began on a freezing winter morning. My first view of Baker Street presented a dispiriting glimpse of icy sleet falling between the dun-colored houses. I donned my carpet slippers, my oldest trousers, and a well-worn bathrobe with the firm intent of enjoying a placid breakfast and settling myself in front of the fire for the rest of the day. I no sooner opened our sitting room door, however, when I caught sight of Holmes tramping about, swearing to himself and tossing a shiny golden coin into the air.
Confounded if I could only lay hands on the villain.
Morning, Holmes. What seems to be the difficulty today?
Difficulty? Moriarty is back in business. Only this morning, Mrs. Hudson received this coin. Here, have a look at it.
A handsome gold sovereign.
Flooding the town with them.
Great Scott, don't tell me Professor Moriarty, the greatest criminal in Europe, has turned philanthropist.
No such luck. That coin, Watson, is counterfeit. A brilliant job, more's the pity. Only an expert can spot it. No wonder Moriarty's been so quiet these last 2 months. It takes time to develop a coin as perfect as this.
Well, at least he hasn't had time for murder, arson, or any more of his serious crimes.
Serious? You think flooding the country with counterfeit coins isn't serious, Watson? Do you realize what this will do to the value of the pound?
By Jove, of course. Holmes, that's our doorbell.
Tell Mrs. Hudson I'm not at home.
But Holmes...
I'm not accepting any tuppenny halfpenny cases. Not while Moriarty is threatening the credit of the Empire with his fraudulent gold pieces.
Come in, come in.
Who
Which of you gentlemen is Sherlock Holmes?
My friend over there has the honor.
Whatever it is, I'm busy.
Oh, but this is terribly, terribly important, sir. I don't know what to do. He's dead, you see.
Dead men do not interest me.
Couldn't you inform his relatives?
Well, that's just it. I don't know who they are. I don't even know who he is. I don't even know when he died. Albert, he's my assistant, says it must have been over 1,000 years ago, but that seems quite impossible. There's not the slightest sign of decomposition.
Oh?
On the other hand, until Albert and I broke through this morning, no one had been in that room for centuries.
What room?
The Roman baths. I discovered them, you know. The bricks are undoubtedly ancient Roman. Even the cadaver was clad in a senator's toga. And genuine, I assure you. We found him there in one corner.
Now, let's get this straight. You found a fresh corpse dressed in a Roman toga in some Roman ruins that have been buried for centuries.
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
Watson, what are you waiting for? Bring the gentleman a chair.
But you said you were busy.
Don't be irrelevant. This sounds interesting.
Oh, very well. Well, won't you sit here, Mr....
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm afraid I forgot to introduce myself. Here's my card.
Read it for me, Watson.
Sir George Westbrook, President L&WA Association.
That means London and Wessex Archaeological Association.
Of course. I remember hearing the Corporation of London had engaged you to investigate some ancient Roman remains which you discovered in the Billingsgate section.
That's right, Mr. Holmes. They're under the basement of the coal exchange in Lower Thames Street. Albert and I have been burrowing away down there for over a month. This morning we broke through the final bit of brickwork and emerged into a large subterranean chamber. All right, Albert. I think the opening's big enough. Yeah, give me the lantern. I'll go through first.
Yes, sir. Why, Sir George, your hand is shaking.
Is it any wonder? I'm excited, Albert. Unless I'm very much mistaken, we've unearthed some baths that were built by the early Romans. Yes, well, come along. Careful. Don't tear your clothing.
I say, sir, it is a biggish room, isn't it?
Splendid, Albert, splendid. Look at that ceiling, will you? In almost perfect condition.
Hello, what's that in the corner over there?
Hmm?
Looks like a heap of white cloth.
No, there's a leg sticking out of it. Good Lord, it's a body.
We'd best have a look at it, sir.
Yes, but be careful. Don't touch it. Don't touch anything.
What's that white thing he's got on?
Why, it's a toga, Albert. A Roman toga.
It's sopping wet, sir. If you ask me, he's been drowned.
Drowned? Did you say drowned, Sir George?
That's right, Mr. Holmes.
No, but that's impossible. There hasn't been any water in those baths for over 1,000 years.
Interesting. Very interesting. Tell me, Sir George, what was the condition of the air in that chamber when you broke in? Stale? Vitiated?
No, Mr. Holmes. It was quite fresh. That's curious now that I think of it. Because there was no other entrance to the room except the one we'd come through. The doorway to the rest of the baths was filled by a great heap of bricks and rubble.
You were unable to identify the corpse.
As a matter of fact, we didn't do any further investigating. Albert was quite overcome by the sight of the body. I'm afraid he's never been very strong about such things since the time that mummy disintegrated in his arms while we were working on those pre-Hellenic excavations in Crete.
Hmm.
I sent him home and came straight here to consult you.
You mean you left no one behind to guard the body?
No, Mr. Holmes.
What? Where's my hat? Where's my coat? Watson, don't just stand there. There's no time to lose.
I suppose I should have informed the authorities, Mr. Holmes, but the thought of all those stupid Scotland Yard inspectors trampling around in my beautiful ruins like a herd of elephants. I left a couple of dark lanterns burning. Oh, yes, here they are, in this packing case. All right, now, follow me, gentlemen.
Why do basements have to be so damp and depressing?
Careful there, careful. This is where we started to dig. It's a rather rough tunnel slanting downward. You'll have to bend over, I'm afraid.
You're sure that this earth won't cave in on us?
No, I don't think so, unless, of course, someone should give it a tremendous push of some sort. Ah, It is where we broke through the wall. You'll be interested in this, Mr. Holmes. Notice the masonry.
Yes. Yes, the bricks are undoubtedly Roman. Let's see, they measure 9.5 inches long by 4.5 inches broad and only 1.75 inches thick.
Not unlike those of the Roman baths at Roxeter.
Except that there, the tiles are a mere 1.5 inches thick and measure 16 inches by 12.
Oh, really, Holmes, did we come here to discuss bricks or inspect a body?
Never neglect an opportunity to increase your store of knowledge, Watson.
Oh, and stuff my brain with a lot of useless tittle-tattle, not me.
Here's the hole we made in the wall, Mr. Holmes. It's not very large, I'm afraid. I'll go through first and light the way. Now, gentlemen, if you'll follow me.
I'll go next, and you can bring up the rear, Watson, with the other lantern. Now then, Watson, alley up.
Don't be in such a rush. Here, take the lantern. It's a tight squeeze, you know. Hello, I think I'm stuck.
If you'll pull his other arm, Sir George.
Right.
Oh, phew, glad to get out of that.
I told you should go on a diet, Watson.
Oh, just because you're satisfied you look like a walking skillet and you're... Hello, this is a gloomy-looking spot. More like a tomb than the sort of place one thinks of as an elegant Roman bathing establishment.
Yes, it certainly is more like a tomb at present, complete with remains of the deceased. Although how he was able to insinuate himself into this chamber...
Yes, quite. A superficial survey of the walls and ceiling certainly shows no signs of any recent entry, except by way of the hole through which we just dragged Watson. Interesting, very interesting. Yes, suppose we view the body we came to investigate.
Yes, he's over here, Mr. Holmes, against the south wall. Oh, watch your step. The flooring here is a bit uneven. Here he is, exactly as we found him, lying on his face with one arm stretched over his head.
See, skinny old boy, wasn't he? I say, these robes, or whatever it is he's wearing, they are sopping wet.
Yes, the poor fellow was undoubtedly drowned. Lungs still full of water.
Extremities icy, rigor well advanced. He's been dead 6 to 8 hours, I should say. Holmes, how about it?
Not necessarily. The floor he's lying on is extremely cold, also the air.
Of course, the really fantastic part of the whole picture is the man's raiment. The tunic and the toga with the wide purple stripe. Even the thong sandals are the authentic garments of an early Roman senator.
So I see. Whoever this person was, he was thoroughly at home among Roman customs and manners. That ring of office on his outstretched hand is undoubtedly authentic.
Oh, look here, Holmes. You don't actually believe this is a genuine Roman senator who got himself drowned in this room and managed somehow to stay in this state of preservation?
No, Watson. There are several obvious flaws to that theory. In the first place, although the costume is authentic in line, cut, and drape, the woolen fabric of this toga was woven not on an ancient hand loom, but by a modern machine. Second, the liquid in which the gentleman was drowned would have evaporated in a short time, even in very stale air. And third, this room is neither the frigidarium, which was the cold plunge, nor the caldarium, which was the warm. No, judging by the recessed benches built into the walls, this room was the sudatorium, or what the Romans called the vapor bath.
But of course, Mr. Holmes. Why didn't I think of that? But, good Lord, then how was he drowned? And why?
Suppose we turn the victim over, Sir George. His identity may give us the answer to those questions.
Righto.
Easy.
By Jove, he looks even more Roman from this side. That nose, those hawk-like features, like some rapacious old Caesar on a Roman coin.
Rather accurate and appropriate description, my dear Watson. Yes, this, unless I'm very much mistaken, is Brutus Octavius Bainbridge, the world's greatest numismatologist.
You mean the coin expert?
But of course... I thought the old fellow looked familiar. Well, I've heard he often wore Roman dress when he was lounging about at home. Oh, so that part of our mystery is a perfectly normal explanation.
Don't be too disappointed, Sir George. There are several other little questions to be cleared up, the answers to which may be rather more exciting than you anticipate.
What do you mean, Holmes?
Well, for one thing, Mr. Bainbridge disappeared very suddenly from his home one night a little over 2 months ago. About a fortnight later... The British Isles began to be flooded by an extraordinarily clever counterfeit sovereign.
By Jove.
I pointed out to Scotland Yard that there might possibly be a connection between the two events.
You mean Mr. Bainbridge was a counterfeiter?
I mean, as the greatest living authority on coins and coinage, he was undoubtedly kidnapped by a band of unusually daring counterfeiters and forced to assist them in their work.
I thought you might possibly come to that conclusion, Mr. Holmes.
Great Scott, that voice. Where does it come from?
Over a hidden speaking tube of some sort, I imagine.
But who is it?
Unless I'm very much mistaken, that voice belongs to my arch adversary. Greetings, Professor Moriarty. So now you've taken up counterfeiting. Have I destroyed so many of your activities that you're running short of funds?
I've warned you repeatedly, Holmes, that you are getting to be a nuisance. Surely you must have realized how dangerous that can be.
But my dear Professor, surely you must realize that danger is the breath of life to me.
This time, Holmes, you've overreached yourself.
On the contrary, Moriarty, it's you who have gone too far. Watson, get Sir George out of here. I'll keep talking to give you a chance to escape. Was it necessary to kill Bainbridge after you'd finished picking his brains?
Not necessary, my dear Holmes, but expedient. We drowned him. I wonder if Dr. Watson can guess why.
Well, dashed if I can. Why not shot or strangle? I say, what's all this about, Holmes?
Get out of here, you idiot.
Well, leave you in danger, I should say not.
You see, Dr. Watson, drowning would serve two purposes. It would eliminate Mr. Bainbridge, and it would provide a tasty lure for Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
What do you mean?
I knew he'd never turn down an invitation involving a corpse in a toga, ostensibly drowned in an ancient Roman bath.
Watson, if you have no regard for your own safety, at least have the intelligence to get Sir George out of here.
I'm dashed if I understand what's going on here.
You will, Sir George, you will. Sorry to have to execute you, too. But I'm afraid you signed your own death warrant when you sent for Mr. Sherlock Holmes instead of Scotland Yard. I rather thought you would, you know. Ah, well, this is what comes of associating with anyone who is foolish enough to think he can outwit Professor Moriarty.
Look here, you old blunderbuss. You needn't think you can bullyrag Sherlock Holmes or me either.
No.
Great Scott, what's that?
I rather imagine one of the good professor's hirelings has blown up the entrance to Sir George's tunnel.
What? You mean we're buried alive in this sepulcher?
Just like Aida and her young man. Isn't it romantic? You might try singing yourself to death as they did. Such a waste of time, I always thought. What a pity Mr. Bainbridge won't be able to join you. Have made such a jolly quartet.
That's torn, it, eh, Holmes? Looks as though we're entombed in this blasted place until Sir George's assistant turns up tomorrow morning and finds the tunnel caved in.
Tomorrow, my dear Watson, is Sunday, and the day after, a bank holiday. Better blow out one of the lanterns and save it for later.
But this is terrible, Mr. Holmes. Why, we'll be asphyxiated by the time Albert arrives on Tuesday.
I doubt it, Sir George. There's a very definite movement of air. Fresh air. Icy fresh air. If you'll wet a finger and hold it up, you'll notice what amounts to a slight breeze. No, I doubt that we shall die from any lack of oxygen. We may very well perish, however, from cold and exposure. Doesn't take long to freeze to death in this temperature.
Oh, you needn't be so confounded cheerful about it, Holmes.
Don't interrupt, Watson. As I was saying, we may very well expire unless we can discover how Mr. Bainbridge's body was brought into this room.
What good will that do?
Any passageway large enough to permit the entrance of this corpse would also serve as an exit for Sir George and myself. You, Watson, may have a bit of trouble.
Oh, you go to blazes.
But, Mr. Holmes, what passageway could there be? As you know, the architecture of the ancient Roman baths was fairly identical. There was obviously only one doorway into this bath, and that's blocked by a great fall of earth and bricks.
Quite. But aren't you forgetting, Sir George, the small, unseen, tube-like passage that invariably ran under all the rooms, except the cold plunge?
Of course. The hypocaust.
Now, what in thunder is a hypocaust?
A smallish tunnel lined with red paving squares, which ran from a furnace outside the buildings under all the principal rooms of a Roman bath. If we can discover some loose tiling in this floor, we may thank the ancient Romans for inventing what our poor, retarded civilization considers a modern improvement, namely central heating.
Discouraging. I've dug up 24 spots.
Cheer up, Watson. At least the activities kept you from freezing to death.
Yes, it's ruined my trousers. Good thing I was wearing my old suit. I say, the light's getting dimmer. Holmes, the second lantern is about burnt out.
Keep digging, Watson. It's our only chance.
I say, Mr. Holmes, could you come over here a minute? I think I've found a sort of grating under this last batch of bricks.
Good Lord, let's see.
Yes. Yes, we found it. Watson, help me with these bricks. There. Watson, bring the lantern.
Right here. There they are.
Now then, let's see.
It's black down there, isn't it?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Sir George. We are now in the vapor room. The blocked-up entrance over there leads to the hot bath. That would put the cold plunge on our left. No good going in that direction. When we go down into the tunnel, we should turn right to get out.
Quite correct, Mr. Holmes.
I'll go first. Give me the lantern, Watson.
It's flickering, Holmes. It's gone out.
Very well, then. We'll have to crawl our way out in the dark.
As if I'd been crawling like a snake for hours.
Stop complaining, Watson. At least we're not sealed up in that vault.
Well, maybe not, but I can't say this is any great improvement. Oh, I don't ask to stand upright. If I could only get to my hands and knees for a moment.
There's a shallow pool of water here.
How jolly. I could use a bath, only I'd just as soon not have ice water, you know.
Save your breath. How are you getting along, Sir George?
I'll manage.
What?
Now what?
Something ran over my hand.
Probably a sewer rat.
Delightful. Maybe we could take it home for a pet.
Quiet, Watson. I think we've reached the end of the tunnel. Yes. It opens out.
You mean I can finally get up off my stomach?
Yes, give me your hand.
Oh. I think my back is permanently bent.
Hello? There are some steps here. Steps going up.
And the door at the top. It's open a slit. Yeah. There's a light. Well, there must be another entrance at ground level.
Yes. Follow me and be very quiet. Better have your revolver handy, Watson. This may well be the most dangerous part of the entire adventure. Easy now. Let's have a look through the crack before we open the door.
It's a large, bare-looking place. Now, what's all that machinery?
Those are melting furnaces, presses, weighing apparatus, rolling machines. And on the far side are the acid and water baths in which Bainbridge was undoubtedly drowned. In short, you see before you a very complete mint for the coining of counterfeit money.
Mr. Holmes, who's that sinister-looking man stepping out of the shadows? There, there. Look, he's adjusting a jeweler's magnifying glass in one eye. Now he's hunched over a pile of golden coins. Good Lord, his head oscillates from side to side like a snake.
Enjoying the fruits of your labor, Moriarty?
You! Holmes!
You didn't expect us to return your call quite so promptly, eh, Professor? Don't bother to reach for that acid. Watson has you covered. Better put your hands up. That's right. Now, you'll come around that table. Slowly. That's right. I have a little present for you. A pair of bracelets that...
Holmes, he's going through the window!
Shoot, Watson, shoot, confound it!
I can't!
Why not?
Well, blast it all, you rushed me out of the house in such a dither this morning, I forgot to slip my revolver into my overcoat pocket.
Don't look so crestfallen, Watson. I'm rather relieved we didn't get the handcuffs on the professor. Once he's safely behind bars, I'll have no opponent worthy of my talents. I should probably die of sheer boredom.
You mean sheer conceit?
That was quite a story, Dr. Watson. There's always plenty of action when Professor Moriarty's around.
How true, Mr. Harris, how true. This particular adventure had a rather pleasant epilogue.
What was that, Doctor?
Oh, well, suppose I tell you about it after we pay our respects to the gentlemen who so graciously make this program possible.
What could be fairer? You know, the thing you remember about Clippercraft clothes is not their low prices. Not until you're ready to buy again, that is. What you really live with is Clippercraft's superb styling. The perfect fit, fine tailoring, and long-wearing fabrics. No one would dream your Clippercraft suit had cost only $35 or $40, or $43.75 for a few special numbers, or that your top coat or overcoat had cost only $30 to $40, or your sport jacket $24. No, these exceptional values are made possible by the unique Clippercraft plan. concentrating the buying power of 924 leading stores across America, bringing these fine clothes to you in a pleasant atmosphere where you get friendly personal attention. Selling beautifully tailored expensive clothes at inexpensive low prices at the nation's finest stores is the great big idea behind the Clippercraft plan. That's why men who know insist on Clippercraft clothes. So be sure to visit the Clippercraft store in your city.
The leading stores in the metropolitan area that bring you Clippercraft clothes are Saks 34th, Broadway at 34th Street, Manhattan, Abraham & Strauss, Brooklyn, the Boulevard Men's Shop, Presque Newark, Newark, New Jersey, and the B&B Clothes Shop, 16408 Jamaica Avenue, Jamaica. These great, courteous, and friendly stores are proud to add their names to that of Clippercraft in the label of your suit, top coat, sports jacket, and overcoat.
Now, Dr. Watson, about the epilogue to the adventure of the corpse in the Roman toga.
The officers of the Royal Mint tendered Holmes and myself a dinner in recognition of our invaluable services in breaking up a counterfeiting outfit which had threatened the value of British currency. Holmes received a large illuminated scroll and a sizable check.
Always acceptable, eh, Dr. Watson?
Yes, quite so. I was presented with a priceless Roman ring of office, which we had found on the dead man's finger, and a magnificent copy of Vitruvius de Architectura. On the flyleaf in Holmes' handwriting was the inscription, "One never knows what bit of useless tittle-tattle may save a man's life." The chapter on the hypocaust was underlined.
Got you that time. And now, Dr. Watson, I wonder if you'd like to give us a hint about next week's story.
Well, next week I think I'll tell you how Holmes and I found a man shot under a smashed streetlight. All the evidence pointed in one direction, but the victim had been shot at point-blank range, and there was only one wound, but we heard two shots. Oh, Holmes always referred to it as the case of the well-staged murder.
The makers of Clippercraft clothes and 924 leading stores from coast to coast have brought you another in the new series of broadcasts featuring the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock Holmes is produced and directed by Basil Lochran, with special music by Albert Berman. If you don't know your Clippercraft dealer, write Clippercraft, 200 Fifth Avenue, New York City. Hunger and starvation are the enemies of civilization and democracy. It's up to every American, man, woman, and child, to save a little food every day. In that way, the people of Western Europe can be helped in their fight for decency and freedom. Listen next week to Sherlock Holmes in the case of the well-staged murder. If you'd like to attend the Sherlock Holmes broadcasts in New York, see your local Clippercraft dealer, and he'll tell you how to obtain your tickets.
That does it for Case Closed this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from Broadway Is My Beat, Sherlock Holmes, past episodes of this podcast, all the others, and everything else Relic Radio at relicradio.com. There's also a link there to our Shoutcast stream and our donate button. If you enjoy this and all the shows would like to help out, give that a click. Thanks as always to those who have, and thank you for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.